And so we've got this amazing, like, pure product, but the way we talk about it, we just created a platform to have as much fun as we possibly could with it.
Welcome to the Earn Your Happy podcast. I'm Lori Harder, founder of The Bliss Project, three-time fitness world champion, fitness expert, and cover model turned self-love junkie, lifestyle entrepreneur, and author. Each week, I'll bring you a guest or a thought that will help you bust through your fears, connect to your soul, and get focused and clear so you can elevate your life, business, and relationships. We don't wait until we're ready for someone to tell us we're good enough. We take what we want and we anoint ourselves. Get ready to earn, own, and unapologetically rock your happiness every single day. Are you with me? Here we go. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. I'm telling you, if you have a big idea, you're a big dreamer, maybe you have a hobby, something that you love, you can turn it into a business. And today's podcast is great for people who are really looking at how they can turn their passion into something much bigger. Brian Smith is an advanced sommelier. He is a Wink COO and co-founder. Brian is driven by a passion to share great wine with as many people as possible. I feel like him and I have the same passion. The role of Wink co-founder and COO furthers his mission to create and connect great products with today's consumer. Brian combines his years of experience as a sommelier, winemaker, and brand builder to oversee the world's most innovative and culturally relevant wine program. A firm believer in creative collaboration, he's led Wink to partner with Charity Water, New York Times bestselling author Atticus, and designer Jonathan Simkai. Brian and his team of winemakers carefully craft more than 100 wines a year from grape to glass. Prior to Wink, Brian founded successful finance and fashion startups. His previous wine experience includes creating the wine program for the tech-enabled Clo Wine in New York and founding the millennial cult brand Jolie Follet Rosé. You guys, listen to this show. If you want to scale whatever it is that you are doing, listen in to how creative he's gotten with something that maybe did not have a very creative background. Let's go. Brian, I'm so excited to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, you are doing some really cool stuff. I would love for you to give a little bit of background before we dive into just like all of the other amazing topics we were chatting about earlier. But if you could give a little bit of background into what you're doing right now and also what you're most excited about right now.
Cool. That's awesome. Right now I'm sitting in my garage working, which
is really
what I
cool
do
looking
most of the
garage,
time.
By the way.
I'm really excited to get out of my garage, as many of us are.
Yep.
Jokes aside, I'm really lucky I get to do something that I absolutely love. I fell in love with wine a long time ago. I didn't grow up in a wine drinking family. I was a pro snowboarder, so I was more on the sort of Pabst Blue Ribbon train than wine. But ultimately was exposed to the category and absolutely fell in love with it. And many years later, what I do today, I'm co-founder and president at Wink Wines. We are a direct consumer winery. We create brands and connect with consumers online and offline as well. Some of our notable brands are Summer Water and a new one that we just launched that's really exciting called Wonderful Wine Co. So I get to be an evangelist for something that I personally enjoy, that I love the creativity and craft that goes into. We're constantly innovating and figuring out how we just reach more people with this message.
Oh my gosh. So something you don't know, I'm extra interested in this conversation right now because I'm starting a wine-based seltzer. And just like, yeah, literally, I'm so excited. And by the way, I've drank plenty of Summer Water and it's awesome. And I think it's so cool how, number one, I was a snowboarder as well and drank plenty of Pabst Blue Ribbon. So this is great.
All right.
We could talk about that evolution of ourselves and our palate. But with that said, I really like to know like that that point in your life of how this even happened. Like, how did this become an option for you? Because, you know, I think for a lot of so a lot of our audience is like entrepreneurs or dreamers or people who want to like get that spark of like, how do I reach the tipping point of knowing this dream is the dream? So I love to talk about that place where you were like, you know what, this is it. Like, I'm going to follow this and I'm going to go all in. What did that look like for you?
Yeah. So it was pretty interesting. I left college and just went to snowboard more. Yeah. I competed in college, and after college, I did a season in Utah, and then I made my way to Jackson Hole, Wyoming. So I was kind of living in Jackson, ski bum lifestyle, snowboarding every single day, not even really working for a while, just kind of making it happen.
Yeah.
And I had to get a job. My snowboarding sponsorships were kind of meager and kind of dried up, and I was doing more backcountry riding. And I got a job in a wine shop, and I had no idea anything about wine. It was a liquor store in downtown, and people would come in and ask me, what's the difference between should I get this Cabernet or this Cabernet? And one's like $50 and one's like $12.
Yeah.
And I had no clue. I didn't even know what Cabernet was. And it was kind of interesting because it was actually out of that like inability to serve the customer and insecurity around the product that I started reading about it, tasting. And as soon as I had this like experience of where you could read about the history or a place or the rich culture, where it is on the hillside, how close it is to the river, what grape it is, what time of year, all of these things that are sort of factual and inputs that could help inform how you enjoy something on a sensory perspective. So it's this combination of this like incredible data and diversity, rich cultural history mixed with a sensory experience. And being able to combine, when I combined those two, I was like, this is so cool. I want to learn about this. And not only do I want to learn about this, but I want to tell every single person I know about this. Mm-hmm. And I think I was lucky because they were all snowboarders, were all my friends. So it was, I got to evangelize the category with them, put wine in their glass, get them excited about it. And that's when I was like, I'm just going to be a sommelier. Like, I want to go be a sommelier. I'm just going to focus on this now.
Yeah.
And you can imagine like as a snowboarder, you can imagine living in a mountain town, like, it's kind of a dirt bag. A really good snowboarder, had a really great life, like not afraid to couch surf or anything like that.
Yep.
And going from that and being like, going back to that network and those friends and being like, you know what? I'm not snowboarding and I'm not going out partying because I'm studying the sub regions and appellations of Burgundy.
Yeah.
And I want to understand, I want to understand this at a really deep level. My friends were like, what has happened?
Yeah.
Like, what happened to you?
Did some of them like get interested along with you?
Yeah, it's kind of amazing actually. So
yeah.
I was one of the first, I got really fired up on it. And then I started to get some of my friends into it that were in the restaurant business there. And as it turned out, there was actually this crop of like really talented food and wine people that came out of Jackson Hole. We had one sommelier who became sort of our mentor who moved to town.
Wow.
But there are Chris Pittenger, who's is an amazing winemaker at Grovant. He has his own wine label at Limerick Lane. Jason Barakowski is a chef in Oregon at this organic Hayu wine farm, which is really famous. There's about eight people that have kind of sprung out as restaurateurs. Four of them are winemakers and a couple of chefs. So it actually created in this tiny mountain town, just this really creative community of people that are now really respected and well-established in the space. It's pretty bizarre.
It's bizarre. And it also is just like so holds up with that theory of like, you know, kind of who you're hanging around. And if you become elevated and a couple other people catch on, it's just like, that's why you'll see these groups of friends and people like all running together who are really successful. Cause it kind of spurs that conversation. It all winds up, you know, no pun intended. I said wind, not wines, but I like wines better. So cool.
It's so true. It's kind of like you start to, I was talking about this with my business partner about something else. I mean, we really live in our businesses, right? Like, he and I, that's all we talk about all the time. It's, we're talking about macroeconomic things, but it all comes back to this. We're just living in our business.
Yeah.
And it pushes sort of creativity and conversation and progresses people at a rate when they're kind of living in this passion or this thing that's really tough to find sort of on your own. I think that's what happened in Jackson Hole. All of our time together were creative conversations around subjects that we were just super excited about that actually became, you know, really great careers for everyone.
Yeah. And it doesn't surprise me, like a group of, you know, snowboarders either, because they, as much of, you know, dirtbags that they all were and we all were. Yeah. We know what we're saying. Like, we're just kind of, I trust me, there isn't a better word for a couple of years of my life, but it definitely, they were also like so creative, like, because it was an outlet, right? So for a lot of like creative frustration is what I found for a lot of them, like artists, musicians, like all of those things. So that does not surprise me at all. Like when you can channel that into something that you enjoy. And also I love, I think wine is, it's just so much fun, because it is like when I talk to a lot of people about falling in love with wine, it's like such a visceral moment. Like my husband and I, whatever bottle we're opening, we always ask, like, we pick a memory from that year of whatever was going on. And we always say, where were we and what were we doing? And then we think about the winemakers and who, like, what they were doing. And it creates this like really, it's just such, it makes just drinking wine into an experience. And it sounds like you're obsessed with, you know, like creating experiences for people as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a big part of it. And I did that. So I had a big wine collection when I lived in Jackson. And when I moved out of there to go be a sommelier, I sold most of it. And I gave one bottle to a friend who let me stay in his house and on his couch for like 2 weeks before I left. And I wrote, "Don't drink until, you know, 15 years later," and gave it to him. And he had no idea what it was. We kind of lost touch. And he got my number and sent me a text. Years later, he had waited and then actually had it like with his now wife.
Yeah.
And was like, "I just drank it. I was thinking about you," and reached out. Yeah. So pretty amazing that just a bottle of wine can do that. But yeah, I mean, I think now more than ever, creating experiences we're starving for them, right? Yeah. Like in this current time. And I think wine just has historical significance and efficacy for creating experiences, right? It's a shared experience. So you open the bottle, you share it with people. You typically sit across from people. You're engaged. You're kind of trying to take time out, and it can be its own experience, or it can be a great addition to a moment in time where you're like kind of stopping and pausing and just like living a little bit.
Yeah, I love that. It's a time capsule for sure. Like, it just locks that, it can really lock in memories, which is so cool. So what would be an ideal, like if every bottle of wine you knew could send out an experience to people, like what would that experience be for people when you are knowing that they're getting a bottle of wine? Like, what's the perfect experience?
The perfect experience. I'm going to have this. I'll try and articulate this succinctly. I'm sure you can tell that the way I speak sort of rambles on.
Oh, I make no sense. So welcome to the show. So I will follow what you're saying though.
I think right now it's just like that moment of pause and like self-care, right? There's something selfish about it, but there's something also about sharing that moment. I think I like the social aspect of wine. I mean, when I sit down with people and have a great meal and I pour them something special, I'm giving them something and inviting them something. But I also like the feeling of having my own sip and having it sort of warm my chest and my soul and sort of open up conversation. So I think it's taking a moment to pause selfishly, but also like I wish it could deliver more wonderful social moments where we aren't distracted and we're just enjoying each other.
Oh, that's so cool. And it really is like a time to be able to set intentions, which is cool. And you can, you know, I think that when a bottle is well thought out, it can deliver that too. It's funny, like you look in your fridge, if you get a really good bottle of wine that you're chilling or something, it's like, oh, that's going to be a good time. Like, you know, that's, you're going to have fun. Where if I look at my, you know, my steak or my T-bone, I'm never like, oh, that's going to be a great time with everyone. Like, which it will be, too, but you know, but like, it just represents like, you know how you're going to feel and you know, you're going to like stop and enjoy, which is just so cool. So you're doing, you started your company, which I would love for you just to share. You have another branch that you're doing as well off of your company. So if you could share a little bit about the two different things that you're working in.
Yes, sure. So, you know, the core company or the parent company is called Wink. Mm-hmm. You can go to wink.com and you can find some really amazing wines from around the world, all direct from source. And we do a cute little quiz that tells us about your palate. And then we start to make recommendations based on those answers. And then based on how you engage with the wines versus ratings and ordering and you name it. So it's a pretty cool universe. The way we think about wink.com is it's like, if you could do a one-page wine list from around the world, what would it look like? And that's what we're kind of shooting for. Very so cool. You can try all different varietals and really explore. All of our brands and all of our products are available there. We also sell a smaller set of projects that we started online with our online customers. They rated them, loved them, enjoyed them. They kind of became brands in a virtual world and or in our community before taking them out and selling them into restaurants and retailers. So that would be Summer Water is a great example of that, and Folly of the Beast. And we have a low sulfur wine called Cherries and Rainbows, which is really cool. Mm. So those are sold kind of in restaurants, retailers on a national basis. And then we just launched a really exciting new project, really based on what we were seeing in the market, some personal preferences for things that we enjoy, and then feedback from our community of customers. And that's called Wonderful Wine Company. Mm-hmm. And so we've been working on this for a couple of years. I think organic products, natural wines are certainly an exciting and emerging trend in our space. And I think that if you look at other consumer categories, even cosmetics, I mean, food, of course, people really care about it, but cosmetics, other categories, you just haven't seen the same sort of value proposition and focus and dedication in wine that you have in these other categories. And part of that is just the consumer understanding of the wine category. Now,
totally.
Wine's a natural product, certainly, but a lot of the wines that you find in stores are sort of mass produced and manipulated in ways that the consumers don't necessarily know. So Wonderful Wine Co. kind of cuts against that with full transparency and a focus on everything we can do to make this as environmentally sound and delicious as possible.
Yeah, I love it. It's so funny, you know, because I lived in California for a long time as of up until 2 weeks ago. But I would have these friends who were just like, you know, they would only wear like natural clothing and they would only eat natural food. And then all of a sudden, like when they were drinking wine, they would drink whatever the hell was available, you know, whatever was in front of them. And I was always like, that seems funny. Like they don't care at all about what they're drinking, which is fine. I totally have like, I'm a walking paradox as well. But I always thought like, man, I don't know if there's a lot out there that when I go to the liquor store, it's like really clear that there's, you know, better options, which is so cool that you guys are doing that. And you're doing it a really fun way. Like I love the branding. I love like the messaging around it. It's super, super fun. Totally speaks to me. And I know that you said before this, you're like, let's talk about anything hippie. And I was like, wow, you embody that brand. So it's so much fun. It's like, it feels like fully, what I'm loving is it truly feels like a brand. Like, you know, I look at the shelves a lot and it's like, there's not necessarily a story attached to, even though I think wine tells its own story. It's kind of like also like feeling a personality within that wine, which is so much fun. So what made you kind of decide to go the route that you went where it felt like a lot of personality within the company, within like on the bottle, essentially?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we wanted to start with organic products, you know, great quality, low intervention, no additives or anything like that. So the product was really important. And then as we thought about like, you know, how do we tell it? We've got great product. How do we tell like a story that's kind of interesting and fun for people that we can really like lean into? And we came up with this idea of wellness without deprivation. Mm. Right. So it's, you know, everybody has their own kind of version of wellness. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's wine. So, I mean, you're drinking an alcoholic beverage. So some people don't drink because of their wellness program. Others feel they need to drink a lot because of their wellness program. Varying degrees, but it's wine. And so, you know, one thing about wellness is that it's not rigid. And I think this is a change that has occurred in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Even there are a lot of different things that mean wellness to a lot of different people, and you kind of pull in different things that you find works for you. It doesn't have to be this like extremely rigid set of sort of inputs for your body or your life. And so that's how we approached it. And we were like, well, if it's wellness without deprivation, then it's really like, it's a wholesome sort of better for you selection that's optimistic on life, right? Because it's still wine, you're still celebrating, you're still sharing those moments. And we were like, so let's just go super optimistic and wonderful. So it's really fun because it's so non-traditional. Like in our ads and our social channels, it's like our tasting notes are like, tastes like dolphin rides and like scoring and being an astronaut. And yeah, like, I just murdered that, but it's right here. Tastes like dolphin rides and being promoted to head astronaut.
Oh my God. See, it's like, amazing.
Tastes like magic hour being right and beating the high score.
Oh, that tastes good.
And so we've got like this stealthy, doesn't it? That sounds great.
Yeah. Like give that. Me some of that.
And so we've got this amazing, like pure product, but the way we talk about it, we just created a platform to have as much fun as we possibly could with it.
I have to take a minute to tell you about Super Coffee. You guys, if you ask my husband one quirky thing about me, he would probably say it's that when I find something I love, I could literally eat it or drink it every single day of my life. And that's exactly what happened with Super Coffee long before this partnership even evolved. I was having Super Coffee every single day in the afternoon and still am, because all the time, I'm constantly looking for something to snack on, and I love my beverages. So you guys, this is such a great alternative for me to not only get that sweet fix, but also to get something that's super satisfying. So Super Coffee is healthy and delicious. It's a great alternative to sugary coffee drinks like Frappuccinos, Dunkin' Donuts, Starbucks, energy drinks, all of the things. It combines the caffeine from coffee with protein and healthy fats, and it gives you hours of focused energy with no jitters or crash. You guys, the first time I tried it, I literally could not believe that it was only 80 calories. It's keto friendly, lactose free, and gluten free. It's a best seller. Their best seller is their bottled coffee, but they also make tasty canned espressos, coffee creamers, and ground coffee. I've been using the coffee creamers every single morning. My favorite flavor is the mocha in their ready to drink bottle. And it was recently named the fastest growing food and beverage brand in America by Inc. magazine. You guys, they also have this amazing chocolate mint flavor. And if you love chocolate mint, I'm telling you, it is epic. Super Coffee has a 60-day money-back guarantee, meaning if you don't love it, you get your money back, no questions asked. We've worked out an exclusive deal for Earn Your Happy listeners. Receive 25% off your entire first purchase. I recommend trying one of their best-selling variety packs or bundles. It's a great way to try all of their delicious flavors. To claim this deal, go to drinksupercoffee.com/Lori or use code Lori at checkout. Super Coffee is also available nationwide in over 25,000 stores like Target, Whole Foods, Walmart, Kroger, and CVS. You guys, pick some up. You'll thank me. And so I think getting to that place, though, in your career, or like, honestly, it's getting to that place within yourself. You know, I think a lot of people would love more freedom in what they do or in their business. Was there a moment when you were just like, you know, maybe looking at the old model or deciding to be a bit disruptive, that you were just like, you know, I need to make sure that I'm having fun because this is when I'm at my best? Or what was like that moment of just like, I'm going to do what feels good? Like what were you weighing it against, like a previous experience? And what made you decide to just go completely opposite of what wine people would essentially like to describe a wine as? You know what I'm saying? Like what you did?
Yeah, for sure. It was, I mean, I'm kind of, I don't know if you've ever done an Enneagram.
Yeah. Love that.
I'm like a 7-8.
Okay.
So I'm like, I'm an enthusiast. So I focus on one thing and then I just like,
yep,
I'll discover something that captures my attention and I can't help myself. I think it was, so I kind of like, I left snowboarding for wine.
Yeah.
And I did wine for a while and I left for finance. Which was pretty dramatic. Yeah. I went and worked in finance, commodity trading for a number of years. And actually my first business was in a financial services business, a brokerage. And then I came back to wine. And when I came back to wine, I was like, I want to do a cool hospitality project, but I also want to start making wine. So I started making wine in Argentina. And that was the kind of, kind of the point where I found something. Not only in terms of turning people onto wine, but I love branding. Mm, like I love like same. What makes how do you create like more perceived value in terms of what's in the glass? It can be a great product, but like it can be even better if people respond to the messaging. What makes people pick something up off a shelf and then really enjoy something and like come back to it? And so it was really when I was launching my first brand and making wine in Argentina, I decided to do it in a 1 liter bottle. So it was like a bigger bottle, a non-traditional bottle size. And you would think a sommelier would make really expensive wine. I made really inexpensive wine that was high quality. The label looked completely different. It was like a wallpaper design that was like, you know, pretty progressive. And I just did everything differently. And I think that was a function of being in the snowboarding industry and being a part of like a tribe there, where there was so much like currency around visual identities and branding and like who rode for what. And like, you know, I translated a lot of those things that I really liked into a category that I was also passionate about. And it was different at first. And I had to fight to make it succeed, like literally fight. I think my first wholesale meeting I went into to like sell my brand, they were like, what do you think this bottle's going to actually fit on the shelf? Like nobody sells this size bottle. And I was like, oh my God, did I just like put everything into something that doesn't even fit on a shelf?
Yeah, totally.
But I had to fight through, I believed in it. I had to fight through it. It's how I viewed the world. And I thought I could be disruptive. And ultimately it was hard work, but I found that success, and that taking that risk and finding that success gives you the confidence to continue to be creative. And push. And I think in business in general today, you have to constantly be reassessing the information that you have with your business, the information that you have from your consumers, the information that's out in the world. And you have to move really quickly and be as creative as possible.
Yeah. So you're bringing wine to people in a different way than wine has normally been brought to people. And I know it's becoming more and more popular, especially with what's going on in the environment of the world with COVID and everything, but bringing wine direct to consumer to people. So, you know, kind of creating this like, kind of, I mean, correct me with how to say it, but like a really modern like membership version of a wine club. What made you want to do it that way? Are you guys in stores? Like what made you decide that this is the way you were going to do it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I had been building my own brand through traditional channels, selling into stores, standing in stores, pouring wine for people, telling my story in a one-on-one way.
Yeah.
And it was very effective. It was rewarding for me. And I was selling, you know, building a brand and selling my wine. And when I met my partner, he came from sort of a payments background, hospitality background as well, real estate development, and then payments. But in payments, he really understood the lifetime value of a customer and sort of e-commerce metrics of acquiring customers and sort of building a direct relationship. And so we got together and you know, he had gone out and tried to send someone some cool wine. He's, you know, a younger guy, was looking for a wine that resonated with him, and all the wine clubs were sort of crusty and just selling faceless, nameless, sort of like back vintage, not great wine. There wasn't anything that was like really culturally relevant to us. And we had this passion and experience for the category. And so the idea was really to take some of the things I had been doing in hand-to-hand brand building and connecting with people, his experience and sort of scaling with customers, and create something where our message, our stories, our products could go beyond the constrictions of geography or people or the traditional wine market. And so we were one of the first direct consumer wine companies. We've been at it for about 8 years now.
Wow. So that had to be challenging though, like all the different things and laws and all of the stuff that you had to face with that. And oh my God, can we just talk about shipping costs? So tell me about some of the challenges, and did you have any points in, of course you had these points, but tell us about some of the points where you were like, oh my God, I don't know if this is worth it. Maybe this is going to cost way more, or not sure if we went the right direction.
Oh man. All the time. Yeah. All of those. I mean, and that's still, you know, that still happens. Gosh, I remember we threw a huge event early on. We were like, this event is going to be so awesome and so cool. And we're going to acquire all of these. This was like really early on. We're going to acquire all of these customers. We're going to come away and like 90% of the people there are going to be like members, and they're going to sign up for lifetime. And it was such a, it was an awesome party. We all had an amazing time. I think we got like 2 customers from it.
Oh man.
And blew like our entire budget. So I was okay, that's not going to work.
So what went wrong with that? If you could go back, like what was it?
I don't think we understood converting customers to members versus having a great brand moment.
I think
that's constantly in conflict with brands and budgets in terms of companies. Like they're sort of the soft, organic brand building actions and opportunities. And then there's sort of the conversion metrics of what makes a healthy business. And I think we were so early on, we just had no idea.
Oh God. Like that's so interesting though, because we work with a lot of entrepreneurs and I think that I literally see that all the time. And one of the events that I had hosted for the past 9 years, like I think people think it's a great converting thing. Like, oh, you must sell so much stuff from it. And I don't really, but it's a tangible piece of the brand. So I learned to separate them. I was like, okay, this is what makes it really tangible for people, but it's not the, like you can get a real expectation hangover, like I'm sure you guys had the next day, if you don't know what it is, right? If you're not like, okay, everybody loves it and they got brand awareness, but maybe we didn't spend enough time like with the conversion portion of this party potentially. So So what about, I would love to know, because there's a lot of people listening who are in that space of like, maybe they're, you know, putting a lot of their time out in kind of making a splash or getting their brand out there or getting their business or their coaching business or whatever it is out there. What do you think is the magic of like attraction and then conversion? I know that's a very large question.
The magic of attraction and sorry, I missed.
And then conversion, like what needs to happen to convert those people?
Yeah, I think it's a number of things. I think you have to check, I don't know, in starting a business, I think you have to check your vision. And if it's a CPG business, for example, or it could be any business.
Yeah.
Usually you're coming into it with like a lot of conviction and a really big vision on what could be. And I think there are many more examples and many more lessons than what I've gone through. But that one in particular is kind of like checking your aspirations against your business case, right? Mm. Like, and making sure that you're thinking through when you're deploying dollars and time and resources in an early stage, you want to be realistic with yourself about a return until you can get data and sort of adjust from there. And I don't think it was a big swing for us. The appropriate decision for us would be to try a smaller event and trial it and work on a process in terms of how we communicated with people and what the flow was to trigger the result that we need to be sustainable as a company so that we can reinvest and take more risks in the future. Mm. And we clearly we just didn't do that. So I think it's like checking your vision for the company against your business case and then figuring out how to like A/B test and lean in and get on a track for optimization and learning versus just like giant swings with enthusiasm.
Yeah. That is such good advice. I can tell you plenty of times when I did that.
Yeah. I continue to do it. But.
Yeah. That's the fun part. That's sometimes the part where you're like, this idea is brilliant. Like I can feel it. And I think for everyone listening, like just the, okay, what I would love to know is, you know, you had said if you don't have data, well, a lot of our ideas don't necessarily have data. So do you guys go out and look for people who have done something similar and try to collect all that you can? Do you bring people who have done this before? Or are you guys very much like going with your own ideas and just doing them a bit smaller and checking them against your audience? Like how do you collect your info before you do it?
How do we do that now? Yeah. I think now it's kind of changed because we were successful in you know, taking some risks and moving really quickly, but we were able to find some nuggets that became the core of an experience that customers were looking for. And then we were able to get really efficient, really thoughtful in terms of how we connect and how we create value. So a lot of it is like testing to, you know, having a thesis and a hypothesis around what's valuable and then testing into how to communicate that and how to deliver that for people in a repeatable way that gets more efficient over time. So we were lucky. We've been able to get through that phase. Now we're really focused on building brands and launching new products like Wonderful Wine Co. Mm. And so in the wine business, we're in a unique position where we have this community of younger wine drinkers. Most of our wine drinkers are and customers are millennial and Gen X. That's the bulk of them. It's a really interesting part of the market. Boomers kind of drove consumption and ratings by points and all of these habits for the past, 20 years, but that's changing rapidly. Mm. And so now we have our own internal data points that we can measure against. Like for Wonderful Wine Co., we've seen an increase in lighter, fresher styles of wine, lower sugar styles. It's a low, no added sugar wine. So we've seen that as a trend. We've seen increased searches for vegan and sustainably farmed wines on our site. And then we've seen some varietal trends. So we're really lucky to be able to have a proprietary data channel that allows us to almost be more innovative, right? We've got people that are members of Wink that we've built trust with that we can now be more innovative and put things in front of them in a small way and get actionable feedback that ultimately leads to like a full launch of like a Wonderful Wine Co.
Yeah. So that's amazing. And so cool to watch the evolution of that customer and to be on top of like to understand that customer and then speak directly to them. How are you getting feedback? Are you doing this through, because when we talk to a lot of people, they'll come up with these ideas and I'll be like, so what does your audience want? Or what does your consumer want? And they're like, I actually don't know. And how should I get that feedback? So how are you guys gathering it? Are you asking for it? Are you having people, are you sending surveys? Like what's the best modality that you've been able to get it back?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's a combination of things, right? You kind of want your own intuition, and then you want to kind of test your intuition. Is how we approach it in many ways. But yeah, we're doing a typical an e-commerce company with multiple products and multiple SKUs and a large data set of consumers. There's a lot of on-site behavior that we can follow. So there's a lot that's happening just in e-commerce metrics in terms of hover states and like heat zones on pages and like where people are going, what they're adding to cart, the velocity of the products. We can also look at, what social posts are people responding to, what emails are getting opened, what SMS are people reacting to. And if you've got sort of a synchronized communication strategy with these consumers, you can kind of pull trends out across the entire spectrum. I also think it's really important to survey your consumers, A, for NPS, so you know like how you're doing as a company and if you're delivering happiness for people and delivering on your promise.
Just for people who don't know, you said NPS. What is NPS?
Net Promoter Score.
Okay.
So it's like an ongoing survey that allows you to understand people that are supporting the brand versus detracting the brand in your consumer base. So it's something as a company you can actually follow over time and focus your team on improving. So if you're doing a better job with the quality of your wines or your delivery or whatever it is, it should show up in your net promoter score. So you're surveying your customers in a sort of programmatic way.
Yeah.
Also think it's super important to know who your best customers are and speak directly to them. Mm. I've definitely picked up the phone and we encourage our team to pick up the phone if they'll talk to us, to share what it is that they like or dislike or want to see from us. So you want to talk to your customers because the way people may perceive you might be very different than the way you perceive yourself. So there's some learnings there. And then we do innovation surveys and types of surveys where we let and invite our audience to give us their feedback on different ideas that we have and categories that we're thinking about. And that's incredibly valuable too. But I think it's this whole spectrum from sort of super technical data and site behavior, clicks and open social listening, all the way through programmatic surveying and then picking up the phone and actually talking to your customers face to face. You usually learn so much.
Oh my God, there's so much to be said about that. Because right now someone might be listening and they're like, well, I can't really do that data end, or I don't, have access to that. Or maybe I feel like that's way over my head. But there's still, just like you said, some of the most power is actually in picking up the phone, just throwing out a survey, whether it's on email or it's Instagram or whatever that is. Like I can't believe how much you can get back just from what we already have at our fingertips. Yeah, the company that I'm building right now, like I actually had them build the branding with me with what resonated most. And I can tell you, like, it's accurately for the exact person that I'm talking to, because it was built by them. So it's we all have access to it now. It's such a cool world that, especially now with your brand, it's so social media friendly, especially for, you know, who you're going after, that there's so much data there that's accessible to everyone. So if you guys are listening, you already have, you know, places that you can access a lot of this information to get started or to move forward even more. So what is something that is like lighting you up right now that you're just like, I am so super excited about this project that I get to work on? Or maybe it's like this idea that's not out there yet. Maybe you can't share it. Maybe you can share a little bit about it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty focused on Wonderful Wine Co. that we're just in such early days. We just launched a few months ago. And it's awesome because it's a startup within a startup.
Yeah.
So you have all of the same decision points and challenges where we have some reference on what we think the business can be, but it's very dynamic. Mm. And like you said, the future, we're still designing the future of it. So that's super exciting. Mm. And I love that it's organic, and I love that it's kind of from the brand perspective, it's a bit limitless.
Yeah.
So that is really exciting for us now. It's like prioritization. And then we're working on a bunch of alternative format projects. And, you know, Wonderful Wine Co's lightweight glass, sustainable corks.
Oh, that's cool.
Recycled paper. It's a focus for our company. And I think when you're shipping heavy bottles of glass all over the world, it's really important from a farming perspective, but also just a supply chain and production perspective. So alternative packaging is super exciting for us right now. We've got a couple of things launching in the beginning of next year that we're just like tinkering with and figuring out right now. And that's a lot of fun.
Oh, that's so cool. And I think what's so cool about the evolution of ideas for anyone listening, it's like, sometimes we think in the beginning that maybe we're, you know, you're going to be a wine company and this is what you're going to do. And all of a sudden, when you kind of have that down, you're like, I actually love marketing and packaging. And I think that we have an opportunity now that we have an audience. Once you have an audience who's tuned into the same general idea, it's kind of like all of these cool, fun projects can come from it, as long as you keep your focus.
Correct.
It's probably very easy to be like, oh, I'm going to shift over here. This is super fun. And then forget about what you're doing. So personally, what's going on right now in your life that you're excited about? Or do you really intersect both? Are you like, you know what, work is also what I'm most excited about?
I am pretty excited about it. We've been very lucky in this time to keep everyone working and continue to grow. So it has taken a lot of work, spend a lot of time on it. I'm also just trying to like chill out. Mm. That's not a very good answer, but trying to chill, like trying to come up with more routines and programs that building better habits that just kind of can help me out. Like right now I'm doing a 30-day Wim Hof breath work thing. I love breath work. I've done like a lot of classes here in Venice and it's something that I really enjoy, but I kind of got off that. So now I'm just doing 30 days. So it's a lot of like little sort of repetition habit building tricks.
Yeah.
And then I have two beautiful children and a lovely wife, Gina. So spending like just trying to make the time with them in the best quality. So a lot of it is like, I think for me in this period, it's been incredibly busy, but honing in, it's also, I'm trying to hone in on what's really important and be extremely focused on those things. And there's a lot of sort of joy and excitement that comes from that too.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I talk to a lot of really like high operating energy, you know, what is successful to the external world, people who also like, you get those moments of needing like a change or needing that moment of like needing, you know, you need to take a little more care of yourself in order to operate at such a high, like, you know, in such a big way. And a lot of people, myself included, do things like that, like the cutoff point, like the 30 days. I'm going all in. Totally. This is it. Like, or like, I'm not drinking for 2 weeks. Like, I'm obsessed with wine, right? But I have to do that a lot. I'm like, 2 weeks not drinking. Okay, we're going to do this. And then
just, you know, blurt it out.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, by yourself and you just blurt it out.
You have to. It's like talking to your... First of all, I don't know if you talk to yourself, but that keeps me on track. Myself keeps me on track. But that moment of like the cutoff point, what do you think that is? Like, why do you do that? Like, why did you pick, I just need 30 days?
I think it's when one behavior is interfering with your success in another area, right?
Yeah.
Like, I believe in wine and in life, balance is very important, but I'm kind of an obsessive person. And so I'd like to build in, you know, I have some pretty good habits, but I'm never going to be the perfect person. I know a few people that I think are perfect. They're probably not, but I'm like, man, they got a good routine going. Yeah. They seem to be all over it and have their shit together.
Yeah.
They probably don't in all reality. So for me, I think it's like, when I'm like really trying to get something and I feel like I'm not getting there and I can identify either causation in my life or something that might help. And then I'm like, 30 days, done. I'm in, committed.
Totally.
And that's a moment that feels, just that moment actually feels pretty good to me. When you commit to something like that, you're like, that's it. I'm making a change and this is what the change is going to be like. And I've now just committed to it. So let's see what happens.
God, I'm the exact same way. Because I think the teetering back and forth, like, I'm going to kind of try. That's the worst spot ever. It takes up so much energy because I'll do the thing that's, you know, pulling me away from what I actually want again. And then I'll feel bad about it. And I'm like, either choose to not feel bad about it or freaking stop doing it. But this in between like energy expenditure on this thing while your brain's trying to operate on your business or, you know, it's such a drain. Like, having that constant thing in the back of your head.
It's so true. I mean, prioritization is such a big thing for me in business, like constantly reprioritizing and thinking about like, what are the few things that I can do that affect change and what I'm trying to accomplish personally and professionally. But yeah, that kind of, if you don't have clarity there or you're kind of like in between, that's why it's nice to have things that are time bound and maybe not too long.
Yeah.
But if you're like in between, there's like an emotional, there's definitely an emotional drag. You kind of seesaw. And then also just like, I feel like people face decision fatigue. I know I get like major decision fatigue where there's too many things hanging out there and you just need to like shut them down and move on.
Yeah. Can you give an example of that? Because I couldn't agree with you more, but just what are some things that I mean, go from maybe your average person to a business operator. What do you think are some of the things that people, that you see people just getting stuck on?
I think you kind of have to self-check on that, right? Like, I think in business, there are things that I'm just thinking about in the background that I have not addressed. I know I need to, and I know they're either big issues for me to face or like value to unlock or put away. So for me, it's always things that it's trying to identify the things that you're sort of like you're focused on, but not focused on, but they're hanging on you. You have to be able to dive into those and create the time in your back-to-back Zooms or whatever your life looks like with kids or who knows what, but everybody's short on time. You got to create the time to like go deep and try and find a solution. Mm. If you can do that, it's so worth it. Because it keeps you moving on whatever it is. It could be a personal thing, it could be a health thing, it could be a family thing. We're so distracted now. So like if you can, sense what that thing is, identify it, and then take the time to dive in deep and try and solve it. You know, that's how I try and approach it.
Yeah. Best advice ever, you guys, for sure. I always like, I view it as having all of your windows on your computer open. And you really just want to focus on the one that's up right now, but you know, you have every single tab draining your battery. And I used to think I didn't have energy. I was like, I don't know if I have the energy to be able to run a company like this. I'm not sure. And then I realized I had a million windows open that just aren't important, they are important, but they needed to be dealt with. And it's like, life is, and I think that is how majority of people are operating. Like there's always that conversation they need to have. There's always that boundary they need to set. There's always that, you know, thing that they need to forgive in themselves or another person or a family member. And it just, I mean, we only have so much energy in a day and it just freaking drains you. So you don't have to tell me right now, but do you have one right now that's just like eating at you that you can feel your energy going to? Or are you, do you always kind of get a plan around it or how do you deal with it?
No, I probably have like three or four some I probably don't want to talk about. But yeah,
we don't have to talk about them. Those are always the ones no one wants to talk about.
Sub five all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got some business things that I'm trying to figure out. And mm-hmm. Without going too deep into it, it's a directional strategy that requires clarity before everyone starts like going in that direction and working as a team to achieve it. And it's not quite there. Mm. And so there are people kind of in between, which mm-hmm. Is frustrating for people and also not effective. Mm. And so I need to stop and like get an answer, find an answer. I know that's not really descriptive, but it's around a long-term roadmap for something that requires significant investment and requires high alignment from our team and organization. And I feel like I'm kind of roadblocking with this challenge and I need to unblock.
Yeah, I actually think it makes perfect sense because I think in our teams of different things that we've done throughout, whatever that is, it's kind of like if I have another partial vision and I just gave them a different vision and then I bring in this other one because I'm an idea machine and that's actually like a huge thing I need to hone in, that they get really, I watch them get, that's out of anything else that could like go wrong in the team, it's typically they're going different directions or they're confused on what I'm trying to tell them because they can't get focused, right? It's like how we feel when we're not focused. It's like, your energy is kind of just, you're just like throwing crap all over and nothing goes anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to avoid sort of churn and confusion. And that's why alignment and like culture in a business is so important. You've got to have that trust and then be able to have those conversations to get to alignment. But yeah, I totally agree. So that's something that I'm working on.
Yeah.
Not too descriptive, but you understand the problem clearly.
Totally. Yeah. I got one right now that, I'm solving.
We can chat afterwards and help each other through it.
Yes, for real. For real. So who helps keep you in check in your life? Who or what?
Oh, who or what? Mm-hmm. I mean, pretty much everyone. I mean, I've got a long lead. I mean, I guess I'm kind of a likable guy, so I get away with, I don't know if I can say that, but I get away with more probably than I should. But certainly my kids, my wife, my business partner. It's pretty awesome having a business partner, actually. Mm. We have very different styles of everything, communication, looking at the world, running a business. But it's been incredibly valuable. We check each other all the time, and sometimes we're really good at it and how we communicate it. And sometimes we're not so good.
Yeah.
But it's a work in progress, and having a partner that you really respect and you guys can challenge each other has been incredibly valuable for me. So we keep each other in check quite a bit.
Oh my God. That just resonated super deep. Like it's funny. I'm building a company, but right now I'm like dreaming of that person who I can bring in different ways. But like, I really feel like as humans, our best ideas obviously do come like together and ideating together. And like, also, I'm sure you feel like some serious accountability for showing up where if you were alone, you'd be like, at the end of the day, it's my company. If I fail, it's only on me. But when I have someone else, I'm like, oh dang. Like, you know?
Absolutely. I actually have worked with a corporate coach or some leadership coaches who have helped us with some cultural things with our team. And that was a huge part of it, was having someone to sort of speak with openly, but that I was also accountable to on a regular basis. And that it was pretty interesting. Just that fact alone, that accountability makes you sort of address some of those difficult decisions and makes you work on things in a cadence that might slip if you were left to your own devices.
For sure. Okay. I could talk to you all day, but my last question for you is, what do you want? Like, if you could only leave one thing with people in the world, like just, you had a billboard, this was your billboard, it's the only thing that you could leave in the world, like a piece of advice. What's something that you just want people to know about life?
Something I want people to know about. I'm conflicted.
Wisdom.
Yeah, billboard or life. I had a billboard idea, and then I was like, what do I want people to know about life?
Yeah, you're like, wait, I love marketing. What can I put on a billboard?
Yeah, I was like, I got a great idea there. I think just that, gosh, I wish I had something better to say.
Oh, I usually don't. So I'm excited to hear your answer too.
I mean, I think it's like you got to just like believe in yourself, but accept yourself as well. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that balance of like, life is going to change, but why don't we just stop there? Believe in yourself, but also, you know, accept yourself as well.
Grace. It's the only way you can actually grow. For sure. I love that. Well, I'm so grateful for you. And I would love for people to learn about how they can like be a part of what you're doing and get all of the wine.
Yes, please visit us at wink.com or wonderfulwine.com or in any number of retailers and hopefully soon more of our restaurant partners coming back. And we'd love to pour you a glass of wine and share what we're so excited about. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. You guys, it's literally such a fun brand. It's the most beautiful, fun branding. I think it's such an awesome gift because it's very unique. You're giving wine, but you're giving wine in such a, it feels like a new experience of wine. So definitely go check it out. Something that we love to do for our guest, Brian, is that everybody gets to either tag you or the wine brand and let you know what their biggest takeaway was. So what would you like them to tag on Instagram?
You can tag at Wonderful Wine Co. I'm at B. Smith Lee. B-S-M-I-T-H-L-Y.
Yep. Okay. Amazing. So you guys definitely tag those two tags and let him know what your biggest takeaway was or if you had an aha moment. And until next time, earn your happy. Bye, everyone. Thank you guys so much for spending this time with me on the Earn Your Happy podcast. I am so glad that you stopped by. If you could take 1 second to share this episode with someone you think would love it, that would be absolutely amazing. And we would be forever grateful. Also, please leave us a review if you feel so moved by going to iTunes and leaving us an honest thought, an honest comment. Tell us what you think. Tell us what you want to hear more of. It would really help us out on our journey to helping thousands and thousands of people. Until then, don't forget to earn your happy. Thanks again, guys. Bye-bye.